This is Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hicks, Browns are going to win.
Mayfield, end zone, Landry, touchdown.
With Dan Kadar and Browns beat writer Nate Ulrich of the Akron Beacon Journal and Ohio.com. With Steve Dorshuk from the Canton Repository.
It's intercepted. Picked off by Denzel Ward.
Chubb will take this all the way. 92 yards.
Ready, Browns fans. Now, Cover 2, a podcast on the Cleveland Browns.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Cover 2 podcast. This is the Beacon Journal's Dan Kadar, joined by Browns beat writer Nate Ulrich. Nate, how's it going?
Good, Dan. How's it going?
I am all right. As I told Nate before we started recording, since we've been having so many audio problems in the Beacon Journal office, I'm currently sitting in my car to record this podcast. So if you hear any weird banging or weird noises, it's because I'm a large man sitting in a car. So with that being said, Nate, let's talk about the Browns and not my technical problems here.
Sure, they have plenty of their own problems.
They have a lot. Yeah, the Browns have, you know, they lost on Sunday to the Steelers, which we're going to talk about here in a little bit, obviously. And we'll maybe look ahead a little bit to Sunday's game against Cincinnati in Cleveland. But, Nate, the news of the day as we're recording this, it's just after 11 a.m. on Tuesday, the Browns released Chris Smith, the defensive end, today. And as you wrote in your story, which is up on the site now, you know, they kind of telegraphed it because he was a healthy scratch. And we're going to get to another healthy scratch player later. But you said they telegraphed it, which I totally believe. So now the Browns, no Myles Garrett, they released Devereaux Lawrence recently, and you know, that's kind of whatever. Now Chris Smith is out. What was to be the strength of the Browns is now kind of a group where you have questions. Like, no one seemed to expect anything out of Olivier Vernon at this point. What the heck is going on with the Browns' defensive line, and is there a silver lining to this at all?
Well, what's going on with the Browns' defensive line is a huge disappointment. You know, when I think about how the Browns as an entire team have been, you know, this talented group that just hasn't met expectations, fair expectations, by the way, like, my stance is I picked them to go 10-6. You picked them to go 9-7. Obviously, they're not going to go 10-6. They still have a chance to go 9-7, but they're going to have to beat Baltimore, red hot Baltimore now, on December 22nd to do that. Yeah, they beat them earlier this year, but Baltimore wasn't what it is now back then when they beat them in week four. So the Ravens have hit their stride. Lamar Jackson's MVP candidate, all that. Good luck getting a 9-7 at this point. Right now, our boss, Mike Shear, at 8-8, which was his prediction,
yeah,
looks like the smartest of the bunch. And I think that's probably the most realistic scenario we're looking at right now. So the Browns are disappointed, the bottom line. The microcosm of the entire team, you could go a lot of ways, but the defensive line is certainly one of them. And, you know, you see the difference with Myles Garrett not in there. With Myles Garrett suspended indefinitely, you see, even if when he's not getting the sacks, and we talked about this, Dan, people who know football, I mean, this isn't rocket science, people who know football know that he affects the game in many ways even when he's not getting the sacks. Just the attention that offensives have to give him opens things up for other guys on the line and elsewhere on the defense, and there's just such a great ripple effect when Myles Garrett's on the field. So, you know, when he's not out there, it's a huge difference. And, you know, here's what happened to Chris Smith. You know, there's a tragedy in his life. His girlfriend was killed in an accident on September 11th. He blew a tire on his Lamborghini when they were on I-90 in Cleveland. Chris and his girlfriend stood on the shoulder of the highway, and a car struck her. It's just an awful, awful tragedy. They had a four-week-old daughter at the time, and now she's a few months old. It's awful. And, you know, for Chris Smith to go through that, you know, really it was kind of a miracle that he was able to continue playing at all. You know, he played in 9 games for the Browns this season. You know, he only had one tackle. You know, he wasn't nearly as productive as he was last season, and that's totally understandable with everything that he had gone through and is still going through.
Mm-hmm.
So all that is a way to lead into what happened Sunday. He was a healthy scratch. Brian Cox and Porter Gustin, newcomers to the Browns and to the active roster. Gustin promoted from the practice squad recently. Those guys had moved ahead of him in the rotation. And then Olivier Vernon also came back after missing 3 games with a knee injury. So just kind of looking at the snap counts here for the defensive ends against the Steelers, I don't think that anyone would have guessed this, but Porter Gustin played 37 of the 62 snaps, 60%. That was the most. Then Chad Thomas, 24 of the 62 snaps. Brian Cox, 23 of the 62 snaps. And Olivier Vernon, 12 of the 62 snaps. Vernon had a big brace on his knee and certainly did not look like himself out there. Obviously, he's trying to play through you know, this knee injury when he's not fully healed or recovered and doesn't have his normal speed and movement. So that's kind of where the Browns are right now. You know, without Myles Garrett, you know, things are a lot different. And, you know, the defensive line banged up with Vernon and thinning out here as we go. Some younger guys getting more opportunities, and Devorah Lawrence mysteriously cut recently, and now Chris Smith not as mysteriously cut. There was obviously guys who had passed him in the rotation, and it had been telegraphed, like we talked about, with him being a healthy scratch Sunday. Dan, it's just the bottom line, cruel business, cold, hard business.
Mm-hmm.
The Browns stuck with this guy. They rallied around him. They supported him. They helped him get I don't want to say get through the tragedy, because – you know, that I don't want to make light of it like that at all, but they helped him cope. And he had talked about that as recently as, you know, a couple weeks ago. But they moved on today. And it's kind of one of those things where, you know, Chris Smith was a great guy to deal with from a media perspective. And, you know, there's just been a lot of sadness, you know, in his life this year, and it's just not a good feeling to write that he was cut.
Right. Yeah. Well said. And, you know, I thought he was pretty good last year, so maybe he'll get picked up or play somewhere next year. And, you know, I think he's a nice depth piece.
He's 27 years old, right, too. So.
Yeah. Yeah, so we'll see there. And I'll tell you what, you know, when Myles Garrett's suspension was announced, Porter Gustin is a guy that I was pretty intrigued by, so I'm going to be interested to see what he does the last 4 games of the year here. He played in a weird scheme at USC, a stupid 3-4. He's more of a defensive end, what he's doing in Cleveland, but they had him stand up a lot. I think he's pretty intriguing. He was always injured in college, but he was a very highly thought of a player who had a very good freshman year there. So I'm intrigued by him. And I'm also, look, I know it would sacrifice the interior of the defensive line, but boy, what Sheldon Richardson did against the Dolphins when he was playing at end, I don't think he can sustain that high level every single game. But I think the Browns should play him outside more the rest of the year and see what he can do. And I guess I'm kind of finding some of the upside here from a football perspective of what the Browns can be on this defensive line that you said is a huge disappointment at this point, and that's unfortunate. But It is what it is. We'll see how it fleshes out going forward. But Nate, let's reflect on the Steelers game Sunday. I don't want to go too deep on it, but I couldn't help but think, you know, what was worse, that game and losing to the Pittsburgh B team, or the Denver game, or that first game of the season, which I think just set the tone for the whole year against the Titans. If you had to rank those, which was the worst loss for Cleveland this year?
Well, I think this in Pittsburgh just a few days ago was the worst loss because of everything that was at stake. You know, backs against the wall. Browns know they have to win, and this is a team they had defeated, you know, 2 weeks previously, and, you know, now you're facing not Ben Roethlisberger, not Mason Rudolph, but undrafted rookie Devlin Hodges at quarterback. Turns out he's better than Mason Rudolph, but he's still their third-string quarterback, and was fourth, I think, when they were in camp. So, you know, he didn't have Juju Smith-Schuster to throw to.
Right.
He didn't have James Conner to hand off to.
Right.
And he didn't have seven-time Pro Bowl center Marquise Pouncey protect him. All those guys were out, the first two with injuries and Pouncey with the suspension. Yeah, Myles Garrett's not there for the Browns, but the Browns have all their main playmakers on offense, the two receivers and Jarvis Landry, Odell Beckham Jr. They have their starting quarterback in Baker Mayfield, the number one overall pick from last year. They have running backs Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. You got to get it done. You just have to get that done. I understand Pittsburgh's not an easy place to play. Browns have now lost the last 16 games there, which is astonishing. But, yeah, everything was at stake right there. The Browns are still mathematically alive for a wild card berth, but it's really a long, 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 long shot, as many times as I could say long. ESPN Football Power Index has them at 5% chance now. You know, they were in the 20s heading into the game and would have obviously bolstered that percentage with a win. But now, you know, it's try to win out and hope for some help. That's the best they can do at this point. And, you know, anyone thinking the playoffs are still realistic, you know, that's just kind of a far leap of faith or a big leap of faith, whatever you want to call it at this point. So, yeah, I think that's the worst one. And then I would say Denver was second worst because, again, you know, you're facing a quarterback who really has no experience. Brandon Allen's first start in the NFL was against the Browns, and the Broncos won 24-19. And yeah, I know the penalties, the 18 penalties in the opener, that was obviously an embarrassment. But, you know, it's week one. The Titans are a pretty good team. They're a pretty good team last year. Not a great team, but a pretty good one. You know, one that's on the fringe of the playoffs last year, and one that is in the wild card race right now. So, you know, I think they are a better team than either the other teams that we're talking about here that the Browns lost to. So that's how I would rank those. Mm-hmm. I just think, you know, when you have Baker Mayfield and he's the number one overall pick, he's the face of your franchise, he has all these playmakers at his disposal, and he's getting out-dueled by Brandon Allen in his first regular season NFL start and Devlin Hodges in his second NFL regular season start. Those are pretty bad losses, and they're embarrassing.
They are, and it begs the question, and this is a little bit hard to qualify, and I think it'll be easier to answer depending on what happens against the Bengals on Sunday. You know, they're arguably the worst team in the league, but You just have to wonder, do the Browns play up and down to their competition? We just talked about these bad, embarrassing losses they've had. But, you know, they beat Baltimore earlier this year. They played very close against some very good teams like New England and Seattle. It just begs the question, are the Browns, you know, playing up and down to the teams that they face? And if so, is that an indictment on the coaching staff at all? Which I kind of think it could be if that's the case. Do you have any thoughts on that? Am I just kind of BSing here? Or what's your take on that?
No, I think that you can make that argument. You know, the Patriots score was, I think, 27-13. Never felt like they were really in it, but they turned it over, like, a bunch and early, right? Mm-hmm. I think there was it three or four turnovers? I think it was three on three consecutive offensive plays. So that, you know, and then they weathered that and kind of, you know, were able to hang around. And Seahawks, obviously, was close. And the Rams was close, right. Even though the Rams aren't what the Rams have been in previous years.
They beat Buffalo.
And then they beat Buffalo, 9-3 Buffalo, right?
Right.
So, yeah, I think you can make that argument. And everything is an indictment on this coaching staff. I mean, everything. I mean, the fact that the Browns didn't match the intensity of the Steelers after the Browns had gone ahead 10-0 and the Steelers just turned it on and went on a 20-0 run and the Browns didn't have an answer and they didn't match the intensity and that in a true playoff atmosphere when they needed to most. And Freddie Kitchens has lamented that time and again. You know what? They don't make adjustments well enough. The coaching staff doesn't make adjustments. The third quarter is a big problem for the Browns. You know, they haven't scored much, and they've given up a lot of points. So, yeah, I mean, the penalties, obviously, you know, that they have cleaned up more in the second half of the year. You know, all that stuff falls on the coaching staff. So yeah, there's indictments all around.
The next topic here is Demaryius Randall, and I can't state it any plainer than this. What the hell's going on with Demaryius Randall? Because here's a guy who is a very good player. He was a healthy scratch against the Steelers in a game where, boy, it sure looked like you could use a rangy safety back there to maybe, you know, make some of these Duck Hodges passes a little tougher. There was the kind of, to me, weird stuff with the concussion protocol with him in September, where he basically said he didn't have a concussion, but he was in the concussion protocol. That's a little weird to me as strictly a outsider, Nate. Is there more going on with Demaryius Randall that the general fan base doesn't know about? Or is this just, you know, he missed a practice and so he was benched for the Steelers game? Or is there more going on here with him?
Well, I mean, those are all great questions. I'll tell you as much as I know, which isn't everything. And it's kind of a wait and see until he talks, okay? So this is Tuesday morning here. We're recording.
Mm-hmm.
The Browns don't practice today. He's going to talk here soon, maybe tomorrow. I don't know for sure, but he should talk this week to media. And he's never shied away from that. I give him a ton of credit. He always talks. I mean, after losses, after the worst losses, the most heartbreaking losses, he talks. He always stands up and faces the music when it comes to addressing media. So I expect to hear his side of the story soon. So I'm not gonna criticize him or blast him because I want to hear his side of the story first. I think there's more to it. But basically, he's been in some disagreements with the Browns this season. I mean, that's obvious. That's on the record. We know that. This has been a disastrous contract year for him. I talked to him in training camp. You know, he's very confident. He thinks he's the best free safety in the game. He thinks he should be paid like it. But, you know, this contract year has not gone.
No.
The way he could have... the way he wanted. I mean, he hasn't said that, but there's just no way it has. I'm going to go ahead and make that judgment. you know, he's only played in 7 games. He missed 2 in concussion protocol, and yes, he disagreed with the medical staff about whether he actually should have been in concussion protocol. He said he's only had 1 concussion in his life, and that it was in the past, not this year. Then he missed a couple games with a hamstring injury that he suffered October 13th at the very end of the Seahawks game. And then he missed the Steelers game. He was left home, healthy scratch. They had to rule him out Saturday because NFL rules say that, you know, if a guy doesn't travel, you have to let everyone know by ruling him out. And it was a coach's decision that he stayed home. And what's interesting, Dan, is I go out to the practices, every practice, with an exception. We did not go out there on Thanksgiving. The Browns didn't have media availability, and frankly, I did not want media availability because I have a family. I have right. to, you know, make the turkey Thanksgiving morning, and, you know, I got, you know, I'm a human too. You know, most sure. people enjoy Thanksgiving dinner with the family, so. That's what I was doing. I'm not going to speak for all the media members, but since I've been on the beat 10 seasons now, we've never been out there on Thanksgiving. So that happened. And the point of me telling you this is when we do go out to practice, they only let us out there for like 20 to 30 minutes, but it allows us to take attendance and see who's there and who's not. And we always do. And Demaryius Randall is out there on Wednesday and Thursday. Those are the practices we were out there. I can't speak to Thursday Thanksgiving Day because, again, we weren't there. But if he did not practice, which has been reported that he skipped a practice, if he did not practice, the Browns should have, by rule, put him on the injury report as a DNP, non-injury related. Hmm. He was not on the injury report as a DNP. So if he, in fact, skipped a practice – and they didn't put him on there, that's a violation of injury report rules. So yesterday I asked Freddie Kitchens, point blank, did he practice every day last week that you guys practiced? Because we're out there to see who's out there, except for Thanksgiving, we weren't out there. And Freddie won't answer the question.
Oof.
He said, well, I'm not going to tell you what I talked to Demaryius about. I said, I'm not asking you about your conversation, I'm asking you if he practiced.
Right.
He said, well, you're trying to get to the reason why he didn't play. He did not answer whether he practiced or not. So is it possible that he started practice and left early, you know, just walked off the field, declined to participate, you know, and that's why he was not listed as a DNP? That's possible. But there's been no clear description of exactly what went on. So I'm waiting to hear from Demaryius, and there, you know, I did hear on Sunday that he was not happy about the fact that the Browns were practicing outside in the cold. I did not, you know, write that or report that because that was just a rumor going on. You know, and I know Doug Deacon went on the radio yesterday on 92.3 The Fan. I heard it. And he said that Demaryius, you know, the cold was an issue, and he wanted heaters on the field. So that was, like, part of the reason or the reason that he left and did not participate or just didn't practice at all. So, again, there's just a lot of
– Right.
there's rumors about, you know, the cold being an issue for him or a reason why he wasn't happy, and then he did either didn't practice at all one day or left early, or, you know, whatever the case may be, we're going to find out from him. And then, you know, people want to say, well, he came from Green Bay. How can the cold be an issue? You know, I heard the term soft mentality used on the radio yesterday. I'm not going to jump to any of those conclusions because there's just, you never know what's going on until you talk to a guy about it. And I think rushing to judgment on this one is careless.
Right.
You know, I don't know this, so I'm not reporting any of this, but I'm just throwing this out there as a possibility. What if there is a reason no one's thinking about? What if there is a medical explanation, you know, for why on a particular day somebody would have an issue being in the cold? I mean, I don't know, but that's why I think it's careless to rush to judgment. Because if something like that's cited, then everybody's going to go, okay.
Right, and you look foolish.
The story's a little different now.
Right.
So let's hear what Demaryius has to say is my point.
Right. So, and by the time people listen to this, that might be a moot point because, like Nate said, he could talk, you know, a little later this week. So stay tuned for that over at beaconjournal.com/Browns. And the only thing I'll say about this is, you mentioned it, he's in a contract year, and it's just really hard to see him re-signing with the Browns.
Totally.
And so
agree.
Now,
yeah.
You know, everybody will tell you the Browns need to upgrade their offensive line this offseason. And now they're going to be in a situation where now you're putting safety there, too, unless you just really love Sheldrick Redwine that much. I mean, Morgan Burnett only has a year left on his deal after this season. He's kind of been just okay, I think. So now you're just opening holes potentially on the roster, and that's always a concern for the Cleveland Browns, which we've talked about, you know, basically every season we've done this podcast. So I don't know. So we'll see there. Last thing, Nate, the Browns have the Bengals on Sunday. The Bengals get their first win of the year, beating the god awful New York Jets. And the Bengals are still the worst team in the NFL. They have a rookie head coach who's younger than me, which is a little weird, I always think. But I don't know, I'm getting older, so maybe it's not so weird. But be that as it may, he's a rookie head coach who has looked like it, I think, at times this year. The Bengals are back to Andy Dalton, which I don't know if that's good or bad. It's the Mason Rudolph complex, really. I can't name hardly anybody on Cincinnati's defense. Am I wrong thinking this looks like it should be a win for the Browns, Nate?
No, you're not wrong at all. I think it helps that the Bengals won the other day. I really do. Because when you have a team that is fighting to avoid that, and I know about this, right, from covering the Browns.
Yeah.
When you have a team that's fighting to win that one game to avoid the dreaded 0-16, you know, that team can be more dangerous than you think it would be. You know, we saw the Browns go 0-16, but they did avoid it the previous year with that one win against you know, a better Chargers team on Christmas Eve. So nobody wants to go 0-16. You know, in terms of the players in the locker room, the coaches on the sideline, maybe people in the front office who want to have the first overall pick and you know, have this, you know, kind of the strategy that we saw Sashi Brown employ here. You know, maybe they view that differently. But the bottom line is that, you know, the Bengals won, so now they're not that team trying to avoid that history, and I think that is good for the Browns. You know, I just kind of want to wrap it up quickly with this. You know, after the fight, the melee, the suspensions with the Steelers, the Browns needed to kind of get over that, and they were lucky enough to play the Dolphins and make sure that wasn't a hangover for them. Well, now they need to get over this devastating loss in Pittsburgh, and so they're lucky again to have the Bengals.
Right. Yeah, well said. So look for coverage of that game coming up on beaconjournal.com from Nate and the rest of our team here. I don't know who's going to win, but all I'll say about the game, Nate, in closing, is that if the Browns happen to lose, I'm going to say right now, next week's podcast is going to be all Freddie Kitchens hot seat talk. So
Freddie needs to win as much as the team needs to win,
right.
If not more.
Right.
And the bottom line is, you know, they should win. I'll pick them to win, and it shouldn't be close.
So we'll see what happens there. Again, the game is at 1 o'clock on Sunday in Cleveland. And we'll have full coverage of that, again, from our team from the Beacon Journal at beaconjournal.com/Browns. So that's going to do it for our podcast today. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We'll talk to you next time.